Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Aki and Bree are here. I think Aki's here. Bree's here. Bree, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm gearing up for the weekend, which is going to be exciting because it's my birthday. Yay!
Yay, happy birthday.
Thank you. But yeah, I'm having a busy week. I worked a lemonade stand out in the heat, which sucked, but it was fun.
Sounds awful.
And I get money. Yay!
Oh, the heat has been atrocious, and someone who I'm sure can speak on the heat because they're in the fucking Midwest, and it's awful there. Mustin is joining the show. Mustin, how are you doing?
Well, now I'm mad. I don't understand why Arkansas, which is in the South, is considered the Midwest, and there is no Midwest. That doesn't make any sense. The only thing that would be in the Midwest would be Utah. I just don't understand why we do this to ourselves as a country.
I don't know why they call things.
We got to grow up.
Is Arkansas officially considered South? Because I know you're kind of up there with
Missouri. We consider it the South, and Missouri is middle. That should just be middle, not West, just middle. It's literally the middle.
So you're like just slightly below middle.
Yep, just like my test scores.
Sweet. How are you doing?
Oh, man, if I was doing any better, there'd be two of me.
I don't know how to take that.
Probably with Dr. Pepper.
Ooh, that does sound good. What are your thoughts on coconut Dr. Pepper? Is that a yay, nay? Have you tried it?
I haven't tried it. I do. I strongly like coconut sometimes, and I strongly dislike it sometimes, so...
So sometimes you're wrong and sometimes you're right. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I really like coconut. I dated a Puerto Rican man once, and he was very confused when he offered me a drink and said that they had coconut soda, and I was excited. And his brother was like, "White girls don't like coconut."
That's weird. White begets right? White.
Air?
I don't know what that was about, but there we go. Coconut's
prove
great.
Wrong, bitches.
Yeah.
Mustin, you were here to talk about your brand new album. For the people who don't know what the album is or who you are, give us the info. Who are you? What are you here to talk about?
I'm Mustin. I have been arranging, releasing, licensing, and curating albums for arrangers. My band, The One Ups, which is the second longest video game band in the longest running video game band in the world. And then my solo stuff for the past 26 years. And wow. This will be my final solo album thing that I do, which is on Friday, which is tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow, yeah. Friday. Yeah.
In 3 hours.
Yeah, in 2026, July 17, this album will release, and it's called World of Balance Character Portraits Final Fantasy VI. And I do every character theme, but Edgar and Sabin have the same theme, so I included Kefka, who has his own theme, but instead of just doing his theme, I went ahead and did Dancing Mad, the final boss battle, which clocks in over 12 minutes on my version.
It is not often that a song makes me emotional. And I told you the first time I listened to this song, by the end of it, just the memories flooding through my head of the first time that song was performed with the One Ups all the way till now, just like it was kind of like my life flashing before my eyes kind of feeling with that song playing. It was just like a crescendo of my life coming together. And if this is truly the end of your solo video game albums, damn, what an end.
Thank you. I I had that arrangement in my head since I played the game in 1994. And then, as you mentioned, the 1UPs performed it live, and that was in 2006, but it was a soft launch version. I didn't get to do things the way that I wanted, but
it was the final show for the 1UPs.
It was supposed to be the final show for the band, but that didn't work out, thankfully. But one thing that happened was that I had written a string quartet part for that time, but I never heard it because we did have three string players there, but they just played parts 1 and 2. And I was amazed to hand off the string part that I wrote from years and years ago to the Videri String Quartet, who performed it and sent it back to me. And I was just amazed. Like, I was like, this is exactly what I thought it would be when I was a mid-teenager in 1994 playing that game. It's fantastic. I only changed, I think, one thing from that performance as far as what was arranged in 2006, is that Jer Roque, who was a fantastic keyboardist, he performed the organ part, so he did all the heavy lifting, and I asked if I could change one note at the end of the third movement to make it major instead of minor, and every time I hear it, I laugh. That's how I know when something is done. Every arrangement has to make me laugh when I listen to it. And that's like, I finally got there with all of these tracks, and I'm just so happy with this album. I hope that people will listen to it and enjoy it.
Well, let's start at the beginning.
I definitely enjoyed this. I just want to comment, since we were talking about Dancing Mad, like, I feel like that one song has been done to death, and how does one make that fresh and stand apart from other versions? And I was like, okay, you got me there. You did something different that I wasn't expecting. So that was awesome.
Thank you. Like I said, it was just a version that I heard in my head when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm excited to see if and how mad Uematsu purists get, because in the second movement, he has the choir doing these offbeats, like he's like, and it has words, and I was just like, this is nuts. Like, that doesn't sound quote unquote right. So that's a objective thing, because that's what the composer wrote. So when I switched it and I put the choir singing on the downbeat instead of the upbeat, that's like probably the biggest thing that's different than the original. But I just added some harmonies and some I wanted the choir to be a little more busy, but not too busy.
Yeah.
And I wanted to accentuate the emotional apexes of the different parts that happen, because there's five different distinct parts to this piece. And I hope that people will hear it and vibe with it. As I said in the liner notes, it has been done a lot, like you just said.
Yeah.
Including Tony Dickinson, who played bass for me. He has a very popular and very good version called Prancing Dad from, gee whiz, like 20 years ago. So he came in and just nailed it. I think I had to give him one note and he fixed it for me. But that was just a pedantic thing.
Was that to remove the cum shot at the end?
I did that. He put it in. He sent me the track and he said, "Mustin, this was great. This is a great version. There was one problem though with the bass part, so I went ahead and fixed it." And I was like, "What?" And then I put it in there, and I get to about 7 minutes in, and then he had that in there, and I was like, "You jabroni."
Can I get the mix with that version?
I seriously doubt it. There's so many files and freaking it's such a headache, man. And then I had Frankie Diggy Diss did the mastering for me and did a phenomenal job. And I'm just super stoked that Dancing Mad, being able to get Rachel Kamui, I don't know how to say her last name, but She's a legit opera singer. She works for, no, not Netflix. She works for a company that does localizations for shows, including like the Pokemon show and stuff that ends up on Netflix. But she used to be a like professional opera singer for 10 years, and she just came in and freaking crushed it. And we just pulled the words from the official Square Enix Dancing Mad arrangement and performance that I think was in Europe somewhere. So we just kind of like nudged the words into my arrangement, and she just knocked it out. And so did Kat and Laura behind her. The other, there's just the three gals that sang, and it was just wonderful working with them, because it's what I wanted to hear. We all had that moment playing the game and getting to the opera, and it just being like that cheesy little vocal sound, but it evoked so much emotion. Only now, to years later, there's so many people that, including Square Enix and other bands and Jay Kaufman, who have done arrangements of the opera with real vocals, and it's been wonderful. But I really wanted to have that in that Dancing Mad arrangement that I did. But I wanted it to be in Latin, because that's how it should be, considering that this whole thing is focused around Dante's Inferno, which he was Italian, but the whole like mythos of it, that's what really got me excited.
I feel like we could talk about Dancing Mad forever, but there is a whole album to discuss. What are some of what are some of your highlights from the album? Because you cover all of the characters. Were there any that were harder to get done than others?
Yes. Gee whiz. I got to, I think, 8 on Mog, 8 on Cyan, 9 on Setzer. Like, I tried. And I'm thinking about going back and taking some of the stuff that I did, because I did do this really nice bossa nova version of Setzer. But it wasn't appropriate for the album, and it didn't make me laugh. So I just said, no, I got to keep going. And then I don't know what it was, but one day it finally occurred to me that Setzer is like, I even tried to do a version that sounded like Kenny Rogers, the gambler, because, you know, he's a gambler, Setzer. And I just realized he's a flyboy, and Top Gun came into my head. And when I listened to it, the first three notes of the melody for Setzer and the first three notes of the melody from Top Gun theme are the same. And I was like, well, this is great. And so I asked my friend, Annalisa, who is in the Air Force. I was like, is this too gauche? And she said, nope, it's awesome. And so I got official military approval to proceed. And that's why Setzer sounds like Top Gun. And Ale Sean just nailed it. His guitar is perfect. It's so, so good. And with Mog, I wanted to do something because the guy, you know, he's a dancer. It should be something dancey. I did a whole version that sounded like Pretty Young Thing by Michael Jackson. It's funky. It's got live guitar. It's got all this stuff. And it did make me laugh, but it wasn't right for the album. And I just had to keep going. And so even though that one is like done, just not mixed and mastered, I kept going until I got to this version of Mog, which sounds like the X site that used to be Twitter has just kind of become a cesspool of vomit, and I don't really use it anymore because it's pretty much all bots. But I loved it when it was Twitter in 2007 when I signed up, and it's great. But I do remember that I deleted everything because I just got rid of it. And whenever I wrote that track that night for Mog and I got that version, I went on to that my ex account and I just typed out Moogle sex and I left it there.
Which, and when that comes up,
SML After Dark.
So that is exactly the word I was going to use. Mog in a crushed velvet robe is just sexy. And yeah.
He's the only one that's like breaking the fourth wall and has the panache to be able to pull off said crushed velvet robe and the porn style version of his theme, because it's such a goofy melody. It's such a goofy melody and tune, but somehow I just got the inspo to just make it into something nasty. And like I said in the liner notes, the people that know me best will know that this is the most me track on the album.
Oh yeah.
So I had to go through a lot of different, some of the stuff. Setzer got it in one. Umaro, I not only did I get it in one, but for some reason it was the first thing that I did, and I finished it in like less than 3 hours. I think 2 hours, just start to finish, and I never changed anything again except for adding Becca Michelson in on her flute.
So Umaro was not a catchy theme to me ever. It was just sort of there, and I loved the treatment of it. That was a lot of fun.
I just thought of this, like, he's 4 years old. This freaking huge Yeti just hanging out by himself and making bone carvings. And I just pulled up all my, like, wood and bone sounds and stuff. And then I went and I remembered an interview with Mick Gordon, who did the Killer Instinct soundtrack, that the newer one that came out, I think, on Xbox something. I don't know, but he was talking about how when he was doing Spinal's theme, he traveled to somewhere in Scandinavia. I think it was Norway, and they used like a lot of Norse influence and all these different bone things. And then he learned about the Kangling, which I believe is from, gosh dang it, it might be Tibet or somewhere around there. But the Kangling is a forbidden flute because it is made out of a human femur. And this company made a, they got a hold of one and they made a sound library for it. And it is the greatest $19 that I have ever spent in my life. Oh, wow. Because I got that. And as soon as I got it, and it's very heavily affected, because when you just blow into it, it kind of sounds like a, I don't know, like a dying donkey's fart. But when you put the effects on it and stuff, it made for this awesome ambiance. So when you hear that, like, boom, like that stuff is all this Kangling flute. And I was like, oh, this totally fits for Umaro. And that was just like a fountain of inspiration that just kept giving. And I had a great time just taking all my little wooden sounds and plucking and all that. And then I just had to put in that big fat synth bass personify how big he is and like walking around and being the menace that he is. And it just worked out for me. But what it was, just the freaking beautiful buttercream icing on the cake was Becca coming in and doing, I think it was an alto flute, so it's a little different. It's not just a regular flute. And then the overblowing it and growling on it. Oh man, it just, I felt the same way. Like, Umaro was not my number one going into this, but when I finished this arrangement in just a few hours, it's like, dang, dude, this is, I love it. And that goes into Gao, because those two are the beasts, and Gao has the Kangling on it. And Gao, I never loved that theme for him because I was young and I didn't understand the tragedy of it. When I realized that I could take it and make it very primal by making it minor instead of major, that's how that came out. And I just love how everything is just paired up.
One of the tracks that really got my attention was Gogo's theme, because it is such a different take on doing a remix or an arrangement of a video game theme. And it reminded me a lot of like Anthony Vincent and his, you know, do a song in 20 styles videos.
Yeah.
Where he'll just take a popular song and like he'll start off normally and then it's the Beatles and then it's Nirvana and then it's doo-wop and just style after style after style. And it was very reminiscent of that. And I loved the story in the liner notes of this one.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do about Go-Go. Go-Go has three lines. They are just this extra bonus character. There's much more story for Umaro as you see him in the world of light, and then you find him in the world of balance, and you find him in the world of ruin, and he just kind of has more going on. But Go-Go is just a weird tag on, so they don't have any character. They just say that they're a mimic or a mime or whatever, and that they'll join you or whatever. And so I didn't know what to do, and I was talking to my kid about it, and she was just kind of giving her thoughts or whatever, and I just kind of dismissed her. But the next day, I had this epiphany. I was like, oh, my God. And so whenever she was up and I was out here, I went to her, and I was like, dude, I thought of what to do. Go-Go is a mimic, so they just do what the other characters do. So I'm going to take each project file for each character when I'm done, and then do save as, and then delete the stuff that's there, but using the palette of each character, I'm going to do an arrangement of Go-Go. And then I'm going to cut that up and make a whole track out of it. What do you think? And she stared at me. She's like, really? And I said, what? Like, that's what I told you to do yesterday. And I was like, really? I was like, you incepted me, dude. Way to go, little baby Christopher Nolan. So that's what ended up being what I did. And it was very time consuming and daunting, but it ended up being one of the more fun things that I did. The idea of going in and taking Terra's theme and then deleting all of the Terra's theme and then using the instruments that were in Terra's theme and then arranging Go-Go. So each one has a full arrangement of the entire theme, but I only used two or four measures of each one. I can't remember. And then I just did the old, because it is such a jaunty piece, I used an accordion. And then Go-Go, when trying to think of their personality, because they don't have one or whatever, I was reminded that in Kill Bill, the leader of the Crazy 88. Ren Ishii, that's it. Her number one person is Go-Go with the schoolgirl and the mace ball.
Ah.
And there's a scene that happens whenever the bride comes up and she says, Go-Go nane? And Go-Go says, bingo. And so I had my friend Natalie play the bride, and then my daughter play Go-Go. Bingo. And I don't know why I wanted to put that in there, but I did, because it's just such a weird tune. But it is very much a concept album track, so you really need to sit down and listen to it and hear each tune and get familiar with it, so that when you understand and get to track 13, that what is happening is a mimic of every character, but through Go-Go's theme.
It was kind of like having an overture that has like little pieces of the whole opera concept, right? Like, so that was just and it was nice that it came toward the end too, because then you really get to have all that, and then you get this big epic finale at the end. So it was nice flow of the album too, just to get to that point.
Yeah, thank you. That's, I guess I didn't really think about that, but it really does work out that way. You need to hear everybody's tracks so you know why this sounds the way it does, and then you have this gargantuan battle theme at the end to take you out and make you feel good.
Yeah. So other songs for me, Shadow as a Spaghetti Western was perfect. No notes.
Thank you. There's been arrangements of it, and even by people that I like, and I think, oh, well, that's cute. But I want it to be legitimate. I wanted it to be something that a Morricone fan could hear and say, I don't remember this tune.
Yeah.
I have all this hiss and dirt in it. So it sounds like the old Fistful of Dollars, Good and Bad, the Ugly soundtracks, because all this older music had noise in it, which was totally fine back then. And so it has that in it. And I wanted it to be in 4/4 time instead of 6/8 time, because the 4/4 time lends to that spaghetti style sound. And then to get Sean to come in and play the Telecaster guitar sound. But he also took his amplifier, and it has a spring in it for the reverb. And I don't know why they did this. I'm sure we can easily look it up and find out. I just know that in those Morricone Western soundtracks, it had that sound of the spring reverb going. And so he recorded some of those, and then I put them in there, timed them out the way that I wanted them to be. And I just don't think you could get any more legit. And then having David Ortiz from the Mariachi Entertainment System play the little couple of measures of trumpet for me was so important to really bring it all together there at the end. And then that's me whistling and just doing the theme the way that I always wanted to hear it. That I thought that it should be this spaghetti western, and then playing that into Realm, which is also based off of another Morricone soundtrack that I had. Sean did all the guitars in the Shadow, Sean Stone, and then I got Grant from Metroid Metal to do the guitars in the Realm piece, with these like four layered guitars that just repeat over and over. And then my daughter is singing in that tune. So here I am thinking about this game where it's never explicitly stated, but it's very much implied that Shadow is Realm's biological father, as they are like the only two people that can wear one relic. And all the other parts of the story and the dreams and everything. And so here I am putting this together, and then she's doing the Realm piece, which she's a little older than 10, which Realm is 10, but she's still early teens, and doing this with me. And then at the end of her theme, I come in and put in the whistling behind her like Shadow. Mm-hmm. And she is the age that I was when I first played the game in 1994. It's such a wonderful,
like a bookend.
Like this interesting amalgamation of having this story of a father and daughter come to life and come through the music.
Yeah, the layers to Realm were what I found interesting, and I had to go back and listen to that one a few times more than I listened to the others. Just that all those layers were very fun, and I loved that. I don't think I would have caught the whistle if I hadn't read the liner notes. So it was good that those were included. That was part of the storytelling experience. So I'm glad that those were there.
Yeah, thank you. I am very glad that the label Materia is putting out they mostly do digipacks, like really nice digipacks, but they're actually putting out a classic clear jewel case CD of this album, and they're printing a booklet with those liner notes. So I'm really glad that it's like kind of old school in that way.
Yeah.
I was just about to ask if there was going to be a physical release or if it was just digital. But since you answered that, I got to ask an inside question. How much will Dale hate all the whistling on this?
I doubt Dale will even ever listen to it. So I don't think we have to worry about that. That dude is busy.
Also, got to give a quick shout out. BX Latino Heat just subbed for the 40th month. Love seeing you in here. Thanks for hanging out. Enjoy the emotes and the kitty cats. We are chatting with Mustin about his Final Fantasy VI concept album. I see Jacob finally made it here. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Did you get a chance to listen to this?
I did not, unfortunately.
You penis.
Which also, I mean, I've also never played Final Fantasy VI, so...
Yeah, you gotta fix that. It's on that, Xbox, you gotta fix that now.
I mean, you could buy it for me if you want. I've got like a backlog of like 3,000 odd games, man, come on.
You don't need to play it, it's not that serious, it's fine.
I will.
It's not the finalist of fantasies?
Yeah, exactly.
I will stab you.
Where and with what?
Everywhere with anything.
All right, that includes your penis.
Jesus Christ, I hate you people. Oh, man.
Think about that long and hard, Aki.
Aki, what kind of questions do you have about the album? I'm assuming you did listen to it since you're making fun of Jacob for not listening to it.
Yeah, I listened to it, but as I have informed everyone in here probably 550 billion times, I'm not a music person. I don't know anything about anything.
You can still listen to music and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Not everybody can.
I will say these two things. I have two songs on it that I really, really like. Mog and the one immediately after that, Go-Go. Because Mog was very funky jazz, and I love that. And Go-Go had like a polka-ish feeling to it, which is just weird, and it was interesting. And beyond that, everything else was... and don't take this rude, because this is how I listen to 90% of my music, was great background music, and it flowed very well. Because I only listen to music two ways. Dancing and singing, i.e. it has to have vocals that I know, or I turn it down to like 40% volume and play my game, and it's good background music, and the only time I notice it is if it's really, really bad.
So you're going to learn the lyrics to Dancing Mad, correct?
No. No, no. That's effort. I don't put forth effort. You know that. I'm lazy. So like it was great in that for me it was great background music, which is not a slight because that's how I listen to most of my music is as good background just it vibes with the world type stuff. So I rather enjoyed the album that way. But those Mog and Go-Go were definitely easily my favorites, and they stuck out a lot to me.
Excellent. Thank you.
That's really all I have to say, because I don't know the game, and I...
You should play the
game,
too.
Don't know shit about music. I have other things to do with my time.
It's a good game.
So I take it that I have to clear my schedule and now play this?
Yes.
Yes.
God damn it.
It's
like I
critically logged in
Final Fantasy VI in 2 weeks.
Hey, you like the Chemco RPG. If you like the Chemco RPG and you don't like this, you're fucked in the head. I'll just put it that way.
I mean...
Yeah.
And we all know Jacob's fucked in the head, so this will be an interesting thing.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, bought me a copy of Final Fantasy VI.
Only because it's on sale.
So now I have to play it.
Yeah, you. It's not I have to play it. It's you get to play it. It's such a good game.
You people.
Yeah.
So, like, Mustin, if you could just make more Final Fantasy albums based on the games I don't have, and then Joe will buy them for me. So, like, you know, we could make this like a nice project.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, my man. We can pull from all the other stuff that I've done. I've done stuff from 10, 7, 4.
Did a pretty good four remix.
I don't know. A lot of stuff.
So I have you Everclear. Done the Velt?
I put a little smidge of the Velt into Gal because...
Yes, which I heard. Yeah.
Which that just needed to be done. And I got permission to do that.
When I was a teenager, I had a hi-fi system hooked up to my TV and all my video game systems.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with big speakers. They were pretty quality. Uh-huh. Yeah, I would absolutely blast the Velt and Cyan's theme every time I played. Yeah.
Yeah, the bass on that is great.
Yeah.
Cyan's theme is so good. I struggled so hard to figure out what to do. And then I figured it out. Whenever it starts, I don't know how I came up with that little intro, but when I finally did a science theme, it meant to start off like a dream, like a, being like happy of a slight remembrance of the theme, and then it quickly sours as Cyan remembers or comes to and thinks about that his wife and son and king and kingdom are gone. And then it goes into just the perfect 80s kung fu montage.
Yeah.
With the synth bass and the koto and the synth drums. I was so happy whenever I figured out what it was that I was doing. I can't even remember the other ones that I did, but I remember that they were, I mean, they must have been dumb because I took like 8 tries to get to that. I'm so glad that I did. Just got to keep going. Only way out is through.
Indeed. Here's a question. The game is very well known for being embroiled in the 90s and 90s game, mid-90s release. Why the 80s sound for the album?
I don't know. I just came to everything... I guess if you had to draw a line, it would be more about the people that made the game and what influenced them. That's kind of where I came from and tried to figure out, okay, I'm messing with Terra. I had this idea to this really ambitious like space EDM theme. But then I thought about it and I was like, what is Terra about? Well, she wants to, she's like from the big city. Which is his Vector, and she just wants to find love and be free. And I was like, that sounds like a city pop music. And that's what I did. I made her theme into city pop. So that's like what was there. When I came to Edgar and Sabin, that they... Because you've got these two brothers, and neither wanted the throne after their dad died, and Edgar knew better and used his two-sided coin to trick his brother into giving him his freedom, and so Sabin left, but then all the chaos of a terrible new antagonist... brought them back together, and they have to join forces to fight off the evil doer. It's a buddy cop movie, man. So I made the music sound like a Harold Faltermeyer buddy cop movie.
It works.
Cyan is a samurai that is taking back, he's getting vengeance. He's the retainer of Doma, and he wishes to kill Thou. And that just sounded like a kung fu movie to me. So not everything is 80s, but it sure does. Like Locke, he's this treasure hunter, the swashbuckler. And he just gave me that real adventure vibe. And so I thought about Flight of the Navigator and the Never Ending Story.
Yeah, and Flight of the Navigator kind of felt like a deep cut. Like, I don't know too many people who know that movie.
I love that movie.
I totally got the Frisbee thing. Like, I got that vibe. I got that visual as soon as I saw it in the notes, and I was like, yep.
Yep, that's it. And same for Celeste and their tragic little love story, and I based that off of... like legend.
Yep.
You've got this girl that's out there. I mean, I guess because I know the same stuff. And I mean, it came out in 1994. They made the game real fast. And I'm sure the people that grew up in the 80s were the ones that were influenced. I mean, the whole thing is a Star Wars story, right? So I think that I just really tried to tap into the what made the people make this. Kind of like talking about Uematsu and getting in what's got to be in Latin. We know like the rocking and the choir and all that and the progressive stuff. I just tried to dig into what I thought was the inspiration to make these characters and their stories and pull out the music from that. So I don't really think about it being 80s when I was going in, but I definitely do recognize it after the fact when I'm driving around and the first track is City Pop, the second track is Top Gun, the third track is Legend, the fourth track is Fighting the Navigator. Like, I'm like, okay, I see a pattern.
Yeah. And like, I always found Strago's theme to be like really quirky, maybe with a bit of funk to it. So like what you did with that was good. Like, it's not, you know, like the
that was
a element.
Yeah. I tried to bring out everybody's stuff. I mean, the Shadow has a spaghetti western style sound. Everybody, I tried to play on it the best that I could, but with Strago, he does have like a weird little funky thing. And then I thought about, okay, well, he is always like stepping up and then getting his groove back. So I didn't mind making a hip hop track. And then, as I said in the liner notes, I always thought that the Masa was the spiritual sister city of, Missidia. Thank you. Missidia from Final Fantasy IV. Mm-hmm. So I used the same percussion bass with the cuica, which is the whoo-hoo sound, and then the shaker and the clave. And I put that down first, and then I just came up with the groove for it. And I was like, well, I love it. I love that track. It's wonderful. It seems a little evolved for Strago, who might not be the best hip-hop dancer, but I think that he would be down with it for sure.
Man, now I'm just thinking about Everclear Hangover.
That's a pretty good tune.
That is.
Final Fantasy IV.
For a party song, that turned out really well.
Yeah, man, we used to tear through things back in the day. And even this, like I said, I finished Umaro like that. I finished Shadow like that. I finished Strago like that. But some of them took years to finish, like to really get what I was trying to do and bust it out. Sometimes I'm fast. So
you're breaking up this a done. Bit. Hold on.
Yep.
Sorry. Yeah. Just rambling.
I think your internet is farting out on you a bit.
Is it?
Oh, sounds clear now.
Sounds clear now.
Yep. Yep.
You're good.
Network access available. Sweet. Anyway, I finished it in November. I turned it in, and it was looking like it was going to be October 2026 before they put it out, which was fine with me. I was just done, and I can listen to it whenever I want. So that's all I really wanted. I'm excited for people to hear it. I don't know how much they'll respond to it. I'm like, there's nothing else I'm going to get for this. It's just going to go out there. But I hope that people dig it, and that I don't know. This is it. It was too hard to do. It was worth it, but it was too hard to do. And with everything that's going on, I am, I might put out some singles here and there. I do have one magnum opus where I want to put out a Donkey Kong Country 7-inch vinyl single, A side, B side. With a music video and two music videos and the two tracks. I imagine it'll be a few years before I can do that. But otherwise, I'm just going to be hanging out with the one-ups and focusing on performing live, because it's going to be a little while before that experience can be simulated. So I'm excited about that. We've got a big show in September. We got a new album coming up in October, and that's kind of been my whole focus for the past like month. So I'm not like quitting. Yeah. I'm just not going to put together a dadgum full album again.
What are you going to do with all the bonus tracks that didn't make their way to the album? Could we see a digital deluxe of all the alternate versions that you have lying around?
No, I think if anything, I will probably during the holidays when I'm done with this big show, I'm done with the One-Ups album, and I'm waiting to find out about if we can perform at MAGFest, if we can perform at VGMCon. I might go back and then go to those tracks like Mog and Setzer and ones that had tracks that were pretty much done, and polish them and then put them out as singles.
Man, I'd love to see you guys back at MAGFest, but I think there's no problem with you guys getting into VGMCon. You guys seem like a lock to get in there whenever you want.
Well, we didn't this year, so hopefully.
No, did you try, or did they just be like, yeah, nah, we want new people?
No, we acknowledged and said,
oh, Vaughn, we're going to have to sit
down.
Let's
look at next year. So it'll be, we'll see. But I already have the show. I was driving home from VGMCon this year, 2026, this past April, and I came up. What they announced the theme for 2027, and it's like medieval. And I came up with, while I was driving, I hit like the lower third of Missouri, and I came up with the whole show. And I'm still stuck on it. The guys in the band are like, okay, well, we'll see. But it'll be a really awesome multimedia experience if I can pull it off.
Very cool. Well, where will the album be available? How much will it cost? Give us all the info.
I don't know. I think it should be at all. It should be, you know, anywhere you like to listen as far as streaming goes. I haven't been given any data about it. I just don't know. I don't know.
Where will people be able reason. To buy the CD?
I don't know. I think it'll probably be. It's confusing because Materia and then Materia Collective and then Kiraga and then Fyra. I don't know. They have a lot of legs, and I don't know what is what. And I don't. I know it's like this seems kind of crazy, but if you just search for me, I'm the only Mustin. That's just Mustin. There are other Mustins, especially associated with the United States Naval Service. But there is a USS Mustin destroyer. Unfortunately, not named after me. But
named after your dick. No.
I was thinking it. I'm glad you said it. I don't know. I just search for Mustin and Final Fantasy VI, and it'll come up tomorrow or Friday or whenever you hear this. Again, it comes out July 17, 2026. So
and by the time
it'll be out there, man.
This, it's there. It's out. You can buy it. You can get it. You can enjoy it. Hopefully we'll have links in the show notes to where you can get it. Hopefully we'll get that info in the next day or two.
Yeah, I'll be looking for that because I honestly like I'm glad to hear there's a printing of this I'll be able to get, because I would legitimately listen to this in my car.
Hell so, yeah.
Yeah.
When you listen in the car, do listen to that Umaro thing, like it really threw me for a loop because I didn't expect it to come out of me. which I say about all my babies, but I was just amazed by that. But I struggled for so long with Sabin and Edgar until I thought about the buddy cop thing. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, I love all the crap that I've done. Going back to June of 2000, when my first ever arrangement came out, it sounds like two dead donkey buttholes being rubbed together on a very hot day. Like, it's awful, but I still love it. It's still my ugly little baby. But I think that my favorite thing that I've done is the Edgar and Sabin on this album. It sounds like I've went to look and see, like, okay, what did Harold Faltermeyer do to make the Axel F, a Beverly Hills Cop theme? And it was like, okay, he used this drum, like, drum. Oh, I have this drum thing. It's fake, but it's like the same sounds, you know, like most people wouldn't be able to tell the difference. And then I went and got that, and I listened to this, and I put this together, and I was like, holy crap. And I was just laughing maniacally the whole time I made it, because it's the most ridiculous, fun thing. And there's a breakdown in the middle where the melody goes out, and I have just like the random cuica sound that goes whoo, like, just it's so 80s, it's so good. And I found in the movie GoldenEye, they use this, and in the game GoldenEye on N64, they use this sound that was like a really, really low, and it goes, and it's from a Yamaha DX7. It's the, like, a Bell's patch when you play it really low. And I went and found that, and I got a Yamaha DX7 just to put that in there, because it makes it sound legit, like 80s cheesy. And if you listen to that sound the next time you listen to that tune and you hear that and you're paying attention, you just imagine Axel Foley or some personified versions of Edgar and Sabin holding up their gun and walking slowly through a warehouse around the corners and looking. And it's perfect. It's just perfect. It makes me just laugh so much. And it's great for driving too. I love
Awesome. Awesome.
Very good. Well, I know we've been chatting for a while. Bree, do you have any other final questions you want to ask before we wrap up?
I do. I have one question. So we talked a lot about the individual songs and their inspirations, but besides the fact that Final Fantasy VI is awesome, like, why a character treatment album? Like, why, what was the inspiration for the album overall?
I don't know.
That's cool. I mean, I didn't know if there was a story behind that too. Just kind of came out, I guess.
Right? I'm picturing, like, the Mr. Krabs, like, money.
definitely was not money. I do remember thinking the 30th anniversary is coming up. I love these themes. And Dancing Mad, I was like, okay, well, maybe a 30th anniversary. That's originally what it was. It was supposed to come out for the 30th anniversary in 2024. But I did not meet that goal.
Yeah.
And I think that the character album was kind of like a product of, like, looking at the other stuff. There's an album called FF Mix that Squaresoft made back in the day, and the cover has these cute little sprite versions of the different characters from 4, 5, and 6. And I don't know, because, like I said, like, Gao never really blew my skirt up. Mm-hmm. Locke was never really, like, my jam. I always skipped it when I was listening to it. But those turned out to be some pretty great tracks. That Gao is, it's not quite EDM, and it's not quite synthwave, but it's somewhere in there, and it makes me drive fast. And that Lock one, I don't know what it was. Whenever I added the Flight of the Navigator sound, it just worked out for me. So there wasn't a single catalyst for saying, let's do all the character themes.
Okay.
Love it. Aki, any other questions on your end?
I am so uneducated about all this stuff. I don't even know what I don't know. So no, I'm good. I'm just trying to absorb information here very poorly, but still.
Proud of you. Jacob, what about you?
What shampoo are you using today?
I use I used to get the generic for Walmart version, Equate Head & Shoulders. But I started just going back to just the actual Head & Shoulders. I find that it really does fight the dandruff better than the knockoff version. So it's definitely the one that you want to have during an alien invasion.
I can, well, yes. Nice reference to Evolution. That is an underappreciated movie.
It really is. But I have a real thing for redheads, and Julianne Moore's in it, so I'm there.
I mean, yeah, and I mean,
it was a solid, pretty perfect.
It was a solid cast too, but
yes, it was.
Everyone here gets to talk about using shampoo, and I'm just like, I don't have hair.
Wait, what margarine are you using?
We're a butter family.
Can't believe
a butter, butter.
Wow. Country Crock.
Yeah, we won't. Well, we just go with the Aldi's brand of. Of butter.
Yo, I'm going to send you some Imperial, okay?
Oof.
Wow.
It's really going to get you shiny.
Get, like, Joe, if you remember how much that stuff costs at Redner's, it has not gone up in price since we worked there. Like, he is not spending a lot of money on you right now. I'll warn you that.
Oh, I know.
Tremendous.
Love it.
That is four sticks for a dollar.
Hell yeah.
Oh, geez. Mustin, it is always a pleasure having you on the show chatting. I know we'll have you back again soon, at least to talk about the 1UPS album at the latest, I'm sure.
Yeah, dude. Always
love having you on.
Where did I tell you what it is?
To date with you. Yeah, go for it.
I didn't. Oh, the 1UPS are doing Street Fighter 2 album just in time for the movie, October 16.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, dude. We're working on it right now, and it's hella.
It's cool as hell. Is Capcom getting involved with this at all?
No, Capcom called me, and they were like, can we help with this? And I was like, no way. Kiss my donkey butt, and we are rock and rolling.
Beautiful.
So that's how I do it. And with this, I have control. I've got what's going on, and when I come and talk to you, I will have links. I will know information because that's how I'm used to doing stuff, man. I feel like such a horse, their donkey's butt, an ass's ass. Like, I don't know. He'll find out tomorrow. So will I. Oh, boy. Yeah. Anyway, I appreciate it. Yes, I will come back to talk about Street Fighter 2 and or shampoo.
What Very about the good. Movie?
Movie I'm shampoo? Excited about. Whenever the teaser trailer dropped, I was like, oh, hell yes. In fact, that's what gave me the idea, like, oh, dude, we got to do the Street Fighter 2 album because we have everything arranged because of when we performed with Yoko Shimomura in Mexico City and she sat down and played with us and all that. We had everything. We just didn't do Balrog. I don't know why we didn't do Balrog, but I came up with a version of Balrog last week. And then I'm going to do a new version of Vega for Jess, our new saxophone player who's replaced Tim on the guitar. And it's probably going to be really nasty, sexy. And it will be our fifth time doing Vega. So it's very exciting.
Very cool. And I am very interested to hear how you guys sound with the new lineup. So
sounds like heaven covered in Imperial margarine.
Beautiful. Mustin, if you were to pick
cheap, greasy heaven,
just like your face.
We
need one song to play at the end of the show. Which would you say?
Edgar and Savin.
Edgar and Savin. I gotcha.
I people kind of like was said before that it's we could talk about Dancing Mad all day, every day, but that's a long one. And Edgar and Savin is the one that I'm like the most excited with. Also, I'll say that Dancing Mad was the first track done for the entire thing.
What was the last one done?
Go-Go. No? Yeah, Go-Go, because Go-Go had to be after everything else, but Mog was, like, those were both the same time, pretty much.
Nice.
Mog and Go-Go. All right, thanks, y'all. I appreciate your time and your questions. I didn't realize that there would be other people listening to it, and that's wonderful, and I appreciate your encouragement and enthusiasm, and I'm going to go eat a grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh, I'm jealous. I'm so hungry.
Hell yeah.
It's the Lord intended.
Mustin, do you have any final words before we let you go?
No.
It works.
A word.
Last night, can't believe what I did. Something so bad, it's gotta be hit. 10 shots of Jaeger, a full case of beer. Why the fuck did I drink Everclear? Last night, can't believe what I did. Something so bad, it's gotta be hit. 10 shots of Jaeger, a full case of beer. Why the fuck am I even still here? Can't believe it's already 3:30 p.m. Drunk all night with my friends again. Party all night with some bitches again. Blacked out early on till God knows when. Oh shit, I can't believe it. My car's on fire and my ears are bleeding. Try to gain composure but my mind is reeling. I think my dick is lost all feeling. What the fuck happened? I cannot remember. Haven't been sober since last December. I've been lit up like a fire. And then I crashed harder than that one September. I think I am a little bit fucked. I think I used up all my luck. It feels like I've been hit by a truck. And now it's time to nap. Last night, can't believe what I did. Something so bad, it's gotta be hit. 10 shots of Jaeger, a full case of beer. Why the fuck did I drink Everclear? Last night, can't believe what I did. Something so bad, it's gotta be hit. 10 shots of Jaeger, a full case of beer. How the fuck did we murder a steer?
Yeah! Trying not to pass out is the last thing I recall. Sipping on that last out, holding up a wall. How did I let them talk me into this? I think I'm seeing blood every time I take a piss. Well, crashed a couple parties, talked up a lot of bitches. Took her to the corner, and now my wiener itches. They found me on the floor of apartment 83 with the lady of the night, only she was hung like me. So now I am in jail, friends are nowhere to be found. And I think my cellmate Butler's gonna fuck me in the brown.
Something so bad, it's gotta be hit. 10 shots of Jaeger, a full case of beer. Why the fuck did I drink Everclear? Last night, can't believe what I did. Something so bad, it's gotta be hit. 10 shots of Jaeger, a full case of beer. Why the fuck is the stick in my ear?
Shit, Joe Cam's been making too many charges. Buying alcoholic beverages. Mini-Q has lots of crazy partying times. Enough for me to write some poopy doobity rhymes. You see, Dale is too hot, and Mustin is not. Cause his terroristic beard is gonna get us all shot. All I've been trying to do lately is get some fucking sleep. But these days stop liking bitches making too many peeps. Please sit on my dick, please sit on my dick. Watch out not too much or you're gonna make it sick. Oh god, too late, I just came on your face. But it's not so bad, you got practice with your dad. Revenge is a dish served best on glass. I guess you'll have to take it out on my ass. But for now I'll just let you use your mind. Cause I think I just fucking ran out of time.
Last night, can't believe what I did. Something so bad, it's gotta be hit. 10 shots of Jaeger, a full case of beer. Why the fuck did I drink Everclear? Last night, can't believe what I did. Something so bad, it's gotta be hit. 10 shots of Jaeger, a full case of beer. The end of the song is here.
God damn it!
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to Mustin for coming on and chatting with us. Yeah, I just made everyone listen to Everclear Hangover. What do you think of that?
Sure.
That's our intermission music.
I wasn't listening.
Oh, well, no, not on the stream. I mean, like, the show. Breaking up with Everclear Hangover.
Mm.
I'll have to play that one after the show for the people unfamiliar with that one. But it's a goodie. Yeah. We got news to talk about. News and reviews, the usual thing. We also have a giveaway going on, courtesy of Ultimate Games, for the game Viking Frontiers, which we'll be talking about in a little bit. You know, the usual spiel. If you're not here hanging out on Twitch with us, you're missing out on free games. Free. You could win. Like, I'm from Canada, A, who won last week and got Assassin's Creed Black Flag Resynced.
Which is freaking awesome.
The coolest part, that was their first win.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that was time I DM'd them, and they got the win for Black Flag, so... Pretty cool.
That's a good first one to land on. Yeah, no shit. Holy shit.
Yeah.
No shit. But yeah, let's get to some news. We got the PS Plus monthly game catalog for July was announced. They're doing the weird staggered releases where these dates are going to be for the US, UK, and Japan, but the rest of the world is getting everything on the 21st.
Okay.
So, out now, they've got Rise of the Ronin.
Not bad.
Yep. July 21st, they're getting Avatar Frontiers of Pandora and Firefighting Simulator Ignite.
Hmm. Very cool.
I don't know the second one, but the first one's awesome.
And then July 28th, they are getting Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Rita's Rewind, Dying Light Citizen Sleeper 2, and Snow Bros. Wonderland.
The only one that I don't know there was the last one. The rest are really good, so that's a very good lineup.
Yeah, solid month for them. And then for the premium lineup, they're getting two games this month.
Ooh.
Yay!
They're getting all fancy-smancy up in this bitch. Okay.
They are getting fancy-smancy. On July 21st, we are getting PsyOps, the Mindgate Conspiracy, which we knew about, which was announced at their summer showcase. And then we are nice. Also getting Indigo Prophecy.
Very nice.
I'm okay. curious if nice. International is going to get Indigo Prophecy or if they're going to get Fahrenheit. Because the European version was released as Fahrenheit and it had I believe a sex scene in it that
was removed. That was from cut. America. Yeah. But I thought when they re-released it, it's back to what it was.
This is the PS2 game.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the PS Plus premium games are just straight PS2 ports. Or well, PSP we'll or PS1. So I'm curious which version of the game is going to pop up. So yeah, that's their month. Big news for Xbox players. We have been waiting for this for a while. Dispatch is finally hitting on the 29th. Allegedly, we're getting it uncut, dick scenes and all. I hope that's true because censorship is stupid.
Yeah.
And the game's funny as fuck.
I'm excited for that one.
You get to see and visit girls and visit tits. It's great.
Well, those will be there no matter what. It's the dicks that's the cause for...
Yeah, but I don't care if we don't see dick.
Yeah, but they're funny.
Especially with the guy who constantly punches people in them.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be out July 29th.
Hell just yeah.
A few weeks away. Sign 2 weeks. Up. Octopath Traveler 1 and 2 are out now on the Switch 2. Good news, there's no save transfer, there's no upgrade path. They're full price. They're $60 each. The only good news is that if you buy the 2-pack, it's $74.99, so you get a pretty good deal on the two of them. And the physical releases are key cards.
Yeah.
Not sure why they even bothered.
Yeah.
I would hazard a guess, but legitimately, I never know what these fucking people are thinking ever, so fuck if I know.
Yeah, I gotta love it. Dying the Light has finally been scrapped for the Xbox One and PS4 months and months and months after release. They finally Techland is
refunding players. It sounds like people who got the deluxe edition were supposed to get it for free, so I don't know what's going on with some of that, but I'm guessing hardware limitations were problematic and they just weren't able to make a playable port.
Probably. That's my guess.
Yeah.
And we got to move on to a new generation soon, too.
I know.
Last bit of news I have. Konami is set to release a free update for Super Bomberman Collection that will add Super Bomberman Panic Bomberman W to the game lineup on August 20th. So free additional game. Yay.
Cool.
Yeah, I didn't have much this week. Aki, what do you have?
I have jack shit.
Very proud of you. Bree, what do you got?
Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 was supposed to come out to Game Pass soon, but it has been removed from the list. I'm just spitballing here. Maybe a licensing issue with music or something?
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are thinking.
Activision, so yeah. Should be easy.
It's been on PS Plus, too, so I don't know what the holdup would be.
Yeah, I don't know. But in the meantime, you can play 3 and 4, so there's that. Glenn Schofield, the creator of games like Dead Space and the Callisto Protocol, is retiring from the games industry, video games industry, where he was a 35-year veteran. He's done.
Wow.
Yep. That is a shiggity shame, because those games were pretty good.
Yeah. Let's see. A Microsoft and Xbox user had their account hacked and lost all their games and OneDrive as a result. I guess once we reported as hacked, the account was suspended, essentially, and all their purchases and data removed or encrypted. Xbox has since reached out to help remedy the problem, and it looks like he got it back. But this is a great example of why I think a lot of us are concerned about an all-digital future. He supposedly had, like, 25 years of saved data, like baby pictures of his son, and, you know, the purchase game to the tune of thousands of dollars, purchased, you know, or gotten for review. I can't imagine losing all the thousands of games on my account.
I want to know if he had two-factor authentication on.
I don't know.
Passwordless account.
Yeah.
Because but, that is what people need to do, is have a passwordless account where the only way people are getting in my account is with my phone and my face.
Yeah. That's it. But it's possible that this person got their account fixed because they were a streamer and got some viral attention. Yeah. Other reports and comments coming in around the situation are that this has happened before and people were told that they're screwed and Microsoft can do nothing.
Sounds about right.
So maybe there'll be a path to better care for the situation in the future.
I know their protocol has been, once an account is compromised, they have to lock it because anyone can be anyone and they can't prove who is who, even though people have like years of receipt data and bank statements and everything else. They really need to figure this shit out because hackers happen. And
And they're going to happen more and more.
And accounts are only going to get more and more valuable as we age and buy more and more.
Yeah. True story. And then the last bit of news I have is actually an update for a game I reviewed 2 weeks ago now, I think. House Flipper Remastered Collection version 2.4 on Xbox has been out for almost a week now. And the game works again. My save was not corrupted. No corruption. So I would like to officially amend my verdict to a buy it for the remastered collection of House Flipper, including all the DLC in one package. It is the gold standard for Chorecore games. And now that it is fixed, I highly recommend it.
Very good. Jacob, what news do you have?
Okay. Did we talk about Microsoft not selling to indie stores anymore?
No.
No? Okay. So, back when I used to live in Lancaster, one of the stores I would somewhat frequent, was a video game / comic book store called Complete in Box. And they are very, I mean, obviously they're in the, used game business, but also new game business. And they have a very dim view on, like what Sony's announced for, you know, no more physical discs. And they've refused to stock like the digital only Xbox Series X console. So a couple days ago, they announced that they've been told that Microsoft and all of its subsidiary companies like Activision, Blizzard, Bethesda, so forth, are not planning on selling any more physical titles through distribution. So what this is like they're only going to be selling to big box stores like Amazon and Best Buy and Walmart and stuff like that. And small indie stores would have to go through a distributor, because obviously, like, they don't have the funds nor, like, the volume to buy, like, 10,000 copies of a game all at once,
yeah,
like these distributors do. And so their distributors told them, like, yeah, Microsoft isn't going to be dealing with us anymore. So, yeah, so it looks like in the future they're not going to be carrying any first-party Microsoft titles. Because they're just not going to be able to get them.
That fucking blows.
Yep.
Yeah, that's rough for the indie stores out there, but the only thing I can wonder is, like, how, what percentage of sales were physical Xbox copies at indie game stores? That seems like a very niche purchase.
I don't know.
No idea, so, but, you know, there are entire areas that basically that's all they have is that yeah. one little mom and pop fucking store, and being like, we're not selling to y'all anymore. That really sucks, because
especially whilst, with how many GameStops are closing anymore.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, especially out here. I mean, like, pretty much I have to go to if I want to buy any used games around here, I actually have to hit up thrift stores in this area. Otherwise, I have to travel over a mountain and drive like 30, 45 minutes away just to hit up like a GameStop or a Second in Charles or something like that. So, yeah, if like you're in a rural area, this kind of fucks you over.
Yeah.
And I miss Second in Charles.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm low key thrilled about it. That I'm back in Second and Charles territory, but, at the same time, my folks, so my oldest son, it was recently his birthday. My folks gave him a Barnes and Noble gift card, and they didn't look up to see whether Barnes and Noble is in this area. Like mm-hmm. even just in, you know, when we go to town. And so as it turns out, the nearest Barnes and Noble is like an hour and a half away. So next time he visits his grandparents, he gets to spend his gift certificate. So, but yeah, so there's that. If you play mobile games, Looney Tunes World of Mayhem will be shutting down October 15th, 2026. I don't know that it ever released on iTunes or iPhone. I know it was on Android. But I don't know if it ever ported over to iPhone. You can make in-app purchases until August 16th. But then October 15th. Yeah, because 15th,
when I hear a game is shutting down, I eagerly want to go spend more money on it.
I mean, I assume what they mean is like the in-game currency. Like whatever you have left.
No.
And then if you want to try it out for whatever reason, you have till August 23rd. That's when they're going to remove it from the app stores. So, I mean, it was around for a few years. So, like, I don't know. So there's that. And then, I
never heard of it. So
you're not a mobile gamer. So that
and I'm on doesn't iPhone, shock yeah. me.
You don't have an iPhone?
I said, and I'm on iPhone, and you just said you didn't know if it was on iPhone.
Oh, I don't know. I just heard you say you're poor. All right, and then last
bitch, I just bought you a game. Shut the fuck watch. There.
Steve Buscemi has been cast for the Far Cry show on FX. No word as to who he's going to play, but
the hero.
I mean, I'm interested now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi will get me interested in that. Anything else? I thought there was like more to that news or something.
About what?
With Steve Buscemi.
No, they like FX announced, hey, he's now part of the show, but they didn't say who he's going to be, like in what capacity is he going to be, any of that kind of stuff.
Cool. Monster Hunter Wilds is getting a permanent price reduction as Capcom is looking to release new DLC bundles as well. So it looks like the launch bundles and the deluxe and whatever are going to be phased out, and they're going to bring in new bundles and a cheaper initial price. Not sure what it is yet. They didn't announce the price, but they just say it'll be cheaper.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah.
All right. Should we move on to reviews then?
Let's do it.
Sure.
I guess.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is EA Sports College Football 27. Developed by EA Orlando, published by EA Sports, provided to us for this coverage by EA. Thank you, EA. Say thank you, Jacob.
Thank you, EA.
Released July 9th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $69.99. In EA Sports College Football 27, step into the modern era of college football where personal ambition meets program pride. Engineer your team with Dynasty Blueprint, take on new positions with deeper customization in Road to Glory, and play as your favorite mascots in mascot mashup while immersed in the iconic traditions and pageantry of game day. Jacob, What's mascot mashup, first of all?
Mascot mashup is they toss in the mascots into the game. And it's not as smooth as like NBA Bounce, where it's like that's the only thing, but the mascots play along with you. So yeah. It's kind of cool. All but right,
well, what's going on in College Football 27?
So College Football 27, keep in mind that this is the first time I've ever played this. So, I'm not familiar with how, I've done Madden, obviously, but College Football, was it last year that they brought it back, or was it 25? Do you remember?
I can't remember.
All right. Well, anyway, so this is the first year that I've had a chance to play it. College football, as you can imagine, is about
college
football.
There you go, guys.
Yay.
So, so much like Madden, there's various modes.
25 is the first year back.
Okay. So much like Madden, there's a couple of different modes for this. And the one that the game really pushes from the get-go is the Ultimate Team, much like Madden does as well. And the unfortunate thing is that I feel like you kind of really have to be a football fan on this one, because like they are like, much like Madden, you get all these packs to that you can open up, and you get all these cards of players that you can add to your team. And I'm just like looking at all these guys, and I'm like, I have no idea who any of these guys are. Like, and it's like, he has a rating of 81. I have no idea what that means, man. Like, I don't know anything about any of these college teams. I don't follow football that closely. So I was at a little bit of a disadvantage there, but Ultimate Team plays very similarly to like in Madden. And so you're essentially unwrapping all these packs and you're piecing together your team. Now, this is where like there are still going to be microtransactions, which was a big kerfuffle before this game dropped, because there were microtransactions in a lot of different areas of this game. I didn't actually run into that many, so I don't know if, like, so I don't know if it's just, like, I just didn't get far enough before they removed them, or it's just I was playing in the wrong modes where they were located at. Like, I don't know, but anyway.
I'm not too sure. I know it was a big issue. I think the biggest thing is that people were mad that there were progression and
right like in the Road to Dynasty. I know that there was stuff player in Road to Dynasty.
Yeah.
But I never saw them. But so I don't know if I hadn't gotten far enough at that point in time or what, but anyway, so Ultimate Team, this is where like there's still microtransactions, like, cause you can still buy in-game currency to unwrap more packs, and build your team. And yeah, you could play this without spending any money, but you know, if you really like want to get your team as good as like with the lineup that you can, I mean, it's kind of like real sports in that regard. You got to spend money on it. So, you know, Ultimate Team, it's pretty neat, but it gets a little bit more nitty gritty than I'd say actually than Madden does. Just because there's way more players that you're choosing from, because obviously there's a ton of college teams, versus, you know, so many NFL teams.
It seems like just on the surface, a college football game would be a lot more demanding and I guess like require more intelligence of the sport and of the players because it's not the mainstream version of the game. This is
right.
You know, the NFL, everyone knows the NFL teams and everyone knows the big NFL players, but college is where they're starting out. So unless right. you're following a local college team, like I don't know much about Michigan State, or I don't follow Florida State, or, you know,
exactly. I mean, it would be like if there was like MLB The Show, except for just minor league guys. Like I could name like a bunch of Marlins guys who are in the minor leagues right now off the top of my head, but like that's random college kids. Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, but random college guys or like single A guys. Yeah. Like, no, that's not happening.
The only minor league player that I know is Joey Balls on The Show, which is my character.
Very good. But so like it does feel a bit daunting, but you know, it obviously if you're buying this, you're definitely into college football. Or you're just really jonesing for Madden in a couple of months. So for me, once I was able to get out of Ultimate, because as I said, like it felt kind of daunting, like it still played the same. But you know, it just like, yeah, I felt it a bit overwhelming. Now Road to Dynasty is, your character, like obviously you get to build, like it's your create a character kind of thing. And your guy starts off in high school. And what I really liked about this feature, is they like, you could choose like where they're from, what state they're from. And then like, you can even start choosing towns. And I was like, all right, like I'm in PA. Let's see how nitty gritty we're going to get into this. So if you want to, you can have them come from Dallas, Pennsylvania. They can come from Berwick.
Ooh.
Like I was hoping McConnellsburg, where I'm currently living, was in there, but it's not. But I could have my guy come from Chambersburg, which is just over the mountain into town. But like it even gets into like some of the smaller towns up in Northeast PA, which I was really surprised, like how nitty gritty they were going in. And the high school part I thought was really neat because, yeah, you're playing games, but also you're going over stuff with your coach and each game is different. Like you'll have like, cause you're trying to put together your profile tape that you're going to send to all the different colleges and coaches and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so each game, like there's certain objectives that you need to complete. Like you need to complete like the 3 rushing attempts. You have to pass for like 75 yards minimum. You have to, you know, it's that kind of stuff. And as you complete these things, you'll unlock like various scenes that get included with your tape. And you can actually start chatting with the recruiters and eventually you get access to the portal and you start making up like your list of like what kind of colleges you want to go to. And colleges will start reaching out to you and like, hey, we really like what you're doing. Like we're prepared to give you a full ride. And then like, you look at their record and they're like 3-12 and it's like, no, thank you. But you go through high school and like the high school part feels really cool because of all the stuff that you get to do, but then you get to college and then all of a sudden it just becomes like that normal bland, like dynasty stuff that like, you know, like Road to Greatness kind of stuff that you get with Madden, where it's just like, you know, your offensive line, like, coach says that you need to do this. Okay, coach, or no, coach, I'm not going to do that. And there's like a couple of situations like off campus, like that, you know, do you go to a party or do you train? And like all this kind of stuff will affect how you perform in the eyes of like your team and your coaches and stuff like that. And I kind of wish that they carried over the high school gameplay into the college stuff. Like, I mean, I get that, you know, in college, you're not immediately, like, you know, as a freshman, you're not immediately going to become the, like, the quarterback and stuff like that for the team. Like, you're going to be sitting on the bench and you're going to be watching the team. But I would have appreciated that for them to destroy the realism a little bit. But, you know, but then, yeah, eventually, like, you become, and I always chose quarterback because that's honestly the easiest for me, and I don't accidentally blitz when I'm not supposed to. Like I'm awful at being defense and offense. And what I thought was kind of interesting with this, but also really frustrating, is that so you can put the game on in easier mode. But catching is not as much of a guaranteed in Madden as it is, or sorry, it's not as much of a guarantee in college football as it is in Madden. And I was finding that, like, you're actually responsible for throwing the ball, but then making sure that you hit the button at the correct time for your receiver to catch it. And there is like a, there is kind of like a color guide for it. Like, you know, red means that, like, red means that they're definitely not catching it. Yellow means like, if you throw it right now, it's going to be a little too early. Green means like, yeah, they should catch it. But of course, that's not always a given, but the game doesn't really explain that. And that was really frustrating because, like, when I first got this, like, I messaged Joe and I was just like, dude, nobody's catching a damn thing I'm throwing. Like, what the hell is happening with this game? Like, this is the most broken football game of all time. And then I found out that it's like, no, like you're actually more in control than you're used to in this game, and you need to be responsible for not only yourself but your other teammates. And I wish that there was more, like, I mean, you can do like the mini games and stuff like that to help you like hone your skills, which there are a ton in this game because the game wants you to like stick around and become better at this, but also get more used to it because they don't want to, like, I do appreciate the fact that EA is very clear, like, you know, this is not Madden with some skim, like, you know, just with a new glossy coat of paint. This is its own thing, you know. And so once you start learning the ins and outs, it's a lot, like, it's definitely, it felt more of a sim than Madden does. So this is definitely a more serious football game. And yeah, like, I mean, there's a huge learning curve with it compared to, like, you know, that easy mode arcadey feel that Madden will give you. But like, there's something that I think football fans, like, whether you're familiar with the college teams or not, can really appreciate with this. Also, I really enjoy the music to it because it's all marching band tracks. And nice. So I'm listening to the bands at halftime and I'm like, wait a second, is this Pink Pony Club? Like, what the hell? And sure enough, it was. Like, but yeah, like, so aside from difficulty, and not like the game not exactly explaining everything, like, hey, like, we see that you're used to Madden, but not this, like, let's walk you through some stuff. I've been enjoying my time with it. This is definitely cool to check out. And I'd like, if you like football games, I'd really recommend this one. Like,
right. Well,
this is like, this isn't like, as I said, this isn't just like, we're going to slap a new coat of paint on Madden. Like, it's not that, like, do not sleep on it like that, and do not write it off like that. This is its own thing.
All right.
And well, I do appreciate EA for doing that.
Can I talk now?
No. Yes, you can.
All right, let's talk price on this one. It clocks in at $69.99. There is also a deluxe edition at $99.99. And if you've got deep pockets, you could get the MVP bundle, which includes the deluxe edition of College Football and the deluxe edition of Madden for $150. Of course, if you have EA Play or Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, you save 10%. But $70 entry fee on the game base price. What do you think of College Football 27?
If you're a big football fan, then handing over the $70 is not going to be that much of an issue. But if you're dipping your, if you're just dipping your toe into this, I would recommend waiting for a sale. Like, and it's not that it's a bad game at all. It's just, I think it's going to be more difficult than what some newbies were expecting, or some people who have just played nothing but Madden will be expecting.
Approachable.
Yeah. Gotcha. And that's not to say like I really have any issues with it. It's just, it's a whole nother thing, and you got to spend the time to learn it.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Next game, Dtopia, developed by Marumitu Games, published by Annapurna Interactive, released July 14th, Xbox, Play Anywhere, Switch 2, PS5, PC, $19.99. Step into the world of Dtopia in this gentle-paced puzzle adventure. In Dtopia, life is curated by artificial intelligence to maximize happiness. As the newest facilitator, it's up to you to solve puzzles to keep the Dtopia residents happy and the facility running. Aki, what is Dtopia?
Okay, so in this, you play as this guy who was basically born in fat, as lots of citizens are nowadays, aboard what they call the Mother Seed, which seems to be some sort of facility in space. And the AI of this entire planet, it seems, has created a giant list of different suburbs, I guess I'll call it, that go from A to Z, it seems. And it's been deciding, okay, based on your genetic markers, you would fit best in the city. And that's how you're placed as the facilitator of Dtopia. And basically all that is, hey, you do some base work if you want to, but then please go around and help people with whatever they need. That's really your primary job. You're basically Mr. Fix-It on some steroids. And this ends up being mostly a puzzle game. It does have some visual novel style elements to it as well. The time is basically split between you waking up and then going to work, and everything that happens basically on that little walk between, where you get to interact with different people around and the machines, and you can go into the they call it the block, which basically everyone has this technology that allows the AI to project whatever the hell it wants for the people to see. So they see this utopian society with lots of greenery and shit. And you, being a facilitator, a Mr. Fix-It, you can switch over into the block, which is how the world actually fucking is. And when you're in it, none of the people will interact with you because they no longer see you. And you get to hear what the robots are actually saying when you're interacting with them, instead of the nice happy stuff that the robot is saying they're saying instead. And yeah, you figure out different problems that they're having. Usually it's like, oh, I accidentally tried to climb this tree and now the tree's gone because it was never really there in the first place, and they can't fix it because they can't see the controls because it's in the block. So you have to go in there and then you slide a couple things over And poof, the tree's back because it's just a hologram. And it's like, oh, thank you for helping. And so it's doing that in between waking up and going to work. Then once you're done with work, you can interact with people yet again in between being done with work and basically going home and going to sleep. And all the little puzzles are basically find something that's glitched or fucked up and then slice some sliders. Occasionally there's another style of puzzle. Sometimes it's like, oh, you have to figure out how many jumps this little block takes because it goes up one number every time it does to make it hit all of these different entryways that require it to be an exact number on that block and get it through all of them to the very end. Or, hey, here's a little one where you have to try and get the numbers all to add up. And there's different things that can add a number to what you have or multiply it or what have you. And you have to get it all of these blocks into where they need to be. Stuff like that. They're not super difficult puzzles. They're pretty simple puzzles. Outside of that, the visual novel aspect is you get to interact with some specific individuals that live in Detopia. And you get to try and become friendly with them. And some of the choices you make can either fall flat and do nothing, and some of them will make the people happy. And there's an achievement for being basically maxing out everyone's happiness. Good fucking luck with that. It is so hard to do. Because you have to know exactly what conversation has the increase in it, and you have to actually click that as the answer. And no, I've missed a bunch of these, and I was like, but I've been so nice to these assholes, why don't they like me? And yeah, it's just a interesting story. I really like it. It's not a super long game. If you take like a day on the weekend, you'll easily finish this game. Even without a walkthrough, just you'll be able to finish it at least one full way through easily in a day. Maybe 100%ing it will take you longer without a guide, because you're going to have to sit through every conversation like 8 times to figure out exactly how to make these people not think you're a piece of shit. Sucking up to them apparently doesn't work. I've rather enjoyed myself with it, and I didn't quite finish it just because I kept trying to go back and make people like me, and then I realized, oh, no, I just missed entire sections, because it's not like you can just go and interact with them whenever you want to try and increase it. No, they have certain conversations that are in certain chapters at certain times of the day that you have with them, and you have to click the right choice. If that's not there, you can't get that little heart symbol for that to increase how much they like you. And it's like, oh, I don't know where I fucked up. There is, thankfully, a chapter select. So if you know where you fucked up, you can go and use that and hopefully fix everything. I haven't used it because I don't know where I fucked up, because that's been like 90% of this game, I feel like, is me fucking conversations up, which, you know, stands true to real life, so I approve.
Proud of you. Well, you ready to talk price on this one?
Yeah, let's do it.
Clocks in at $19.99. What do you think of Detopia?
I think that's perfectly fine for a price for this game. It's really cute. I think most people will probably enjoy it because, again, the puzzles aren't super hard. The conversations aren't, like, mind-numbing or anything. I think it's a pretty good game for basically everybody, including kids. It's very, just very nice.
Very good. All right, moving on. Next up, Dench Attack, developed by Undercoders, published by Fireshine Games, that released July 15th, Xbox, Play Anywhere, Switch 2, PS5, PC, $19.99. lip trick and grind your train in a fast-paced off-the-rails ride through a colorful Japanese dystopia. Outmatch rival gangs, wreck a shady megacore, and take back the tracks with nothing but skill, speed, and style. Jacob, tell us about Jet Set Choo Choo Train.
So Densha Tech is pretty much what happens when you take Jet Set Radio and make it about trains. Like, what if instead of doing like cool, like rollerblading, like tricks on rails, what if you could actually, like, you know, have your actual train do like a, you know, like have it do an ollie off of a single rail monorail line? Or like, what if you could have it jump like way up in the air and just like flip between tracks all over the place? And that's the idea between for Densha Tech. And it is a really bizarre game. And as soon as I saw the preview for it, I was just like, I need this immediately. It very much has the Jet Set Radio aesthetic. So like that cell shading look, the funky music, like even the storyline, like we've heard this story before, you know, evil corporation, evil police state is taking over and it's up to a bunch of scrappy, you know, punks who like riding, you know, insert vehicle here or mode of transportation here. And, you know, it's up to them to overthrow and up to them to join forces and then overthrow, you know, said evil group of folks. And you start off as Emmy, who is this girl who just delivers ramen and finds out that there's this thing, you know, there's these group of people who control trains outside of, you know, the normal cities and use the rails to just, you know, they rule their own territories and they do tricks on them and stuff like that. And she's been doing this for years, but she didn't know that there was an actual culture going on about this. And so you start traveling through Japan and meeting all these different people. And the game does, it does slowly take you by the hand with it and explain the game mechanics. Like the first three tracks that you're going to mess with are all just you getting used to how the stuff works. Now, you use the A button. Keep in mind, I'm going to be talking about the Xbox controls, so yeah. You know your mileage may vary if you're playing on Sony or PC. But you hit the A button to start, and then you're using the right trigger to jump, and the left thumbstick is to move you between other tracks. But of course you can't, it's not always just as simple as just like moving it back and forth. Sometimes you have to jump to a certain height. And other times you have to apply the brake, because if you're going around a corner, if you're going too quick, you're going to fly right off the track. And so you have to plan it, but if you plan your brake at a sweet spot, you also get a huge boost. And all of this is absolutely exhilarating, and I definitely recommend playing this under the influence. Much like Jet Set Radio Future, and Jet Set Radio and Hover and other similar games. And then it does introduce how to do tricks, and there are, first off, I will tell you this, there are a ton of tricks, and you are not going to get them all on the first try. This is not like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater where you can just, you know, fool around with a couple of like sticks and you're going to be good. Like by, you get far enough and it starts feeling like you're playing it at like Evo and, you know, playing fighting games. Like, is this, you know, am I doing Densha Tech or am I playing Street Fighter 2? And so it does get complicated, but the game, and this is one thing I'm really thankful for, the game just like, it just lets you keep going and trying, and it'll just set you a little bit farther back on the track. So then you can like far enough that you have enough time to fix whatever you did wrong. And like, let's say that you were able to grab like a can of spray paint or a film roll, in time, it doesn't like put that back where it was. You get to hold on to it because you grabbed it. So thankfully the game is gentle with you in that regard. And each each stage has its own objectives. Sorry, obviously you're supposed to finish, but you know, obviously, like, and the game wants you to try to like clear it in X amount of time. I very rarely ever get those medals. Usually I do. If I do, it's bronze. I got one silver once.
GG.
But part of that is because the game also wants you to explore, and a lot of the levels, like, and when I say a lot, I mean like almost all of them have alternate paths or like alternate exits. And if you do the alternate exits, they'll unlock stuff on that level or unlock new paths to different areas for you to unlock more stuff. And so there is a lot of replayability as you're going through this game. And each level has a series of dares that you have to complete, like don't crash at all, which that never happens for me. Like deflate X amount of balloons, or like do a trick while you're breaking through a window, stuff like that. And like, it's just like, it's really fantastic playing through all this stuff. And as like, you're unlocking all this different, all these different things, it eventually builds into a bunch of unlockables throughout the game. Now, there are characters to unlock. There's new trains to unlock. There's new tricks that you could do. There's new paint jobs for the trains that you can get, or new stickers. I wish you could apply more than one at a time, but like, a lot of the looks are pretty awesome by themselves, so I wasn't too, you know, whatever about it. But then also what's really cool is that each region has its own zine that you put together, and it will have all sorts of information about the island, like who the other rail riders are, who the other like what are points of interest, what are some cool places to do tricks on, like photos of obviously said tricks happening, articles on music, articles on their thoughts. Like, there's even like ramen reviews in there. And it's just like, it's like, it really embraces its own weirdness. And like, I just love the game for that. Visually, it's a lot. I mean, just think of Jet Set Radio Future or similar games like Hover. And you know, you'll get the idea. Like Aki will probably not have a good time with this game, unfortunately. Like, there are a lot of flashes and stuff like that. But the game does progress pretty well. And as long as you, like, you finish the level, you're moving on to the next thing. And so the game wants you to enjoy it, and it wants you to like experience everything that it has to offer. And so, as I said, like, there is a ton of replayability in this. It's just, you've got to put in the time and effort to learn how to do all the tricks and be willing to explore. That being said, taking the time to explore stuff is totally worth it. And like, the plot line is like, just stuff that your character pulls off is absolutely batshit insane. Like, there's one track where you're going through, like, you're actually going through a volcano, and like, you have to outrun all these like little flame balls that are coming up the rails behind you. And so you have to make sure that you're like, you're on the right track at the time. And, you know, just avoiding the rising lava. There's another one where your train jumps off the track and you land on top of a Ferris wheel, and you're just riding that Ferris wheel through the ocean or the sea to the next island. And it's just, it's absolutely bizarre. It is wonderfully weird. And I love this game. Like, this is one of my favorites so far this year.
Very cool. Let's talk about price on this one. There is a...
Buy it. I don't care.
Well, there is a day one bundle that includes the game as well as two different skin packs that are normally $1.99 each. You basically get $4 of skin packs for free. They have the seasonal skins and then the Dench Attack Computer Throwback, which is the Xbox exclusive skin. Every platform has its own exclusive skin, so nobody's left out. You already said buy it. Is there anything else you want to say about it?
Like, the music is tops. Like, if you like Jet Set Radio, you're going to love this. And I hope to see more of this kind of stuff, like, out. Like, I wish that indie developers still continued, you know, developing stuff this weird and wonderful. Like, this is a breath of fresh air. And I love the fact that, you know, we got this game.
Very cool. And if you have Game Pass, it's there, so you could try it if you are not sure about buying it. Next up, Viking Frontiers, developed by Wildlands Interactive and Bloom Entertainment, published by Ultimate Games, released July 9th, Series X and S, PS5, $19.99. Survival of your people, that's the only thing that matters. Become the leader of a newly founded Viking settlement and lead it to safety and glory. Gather, build, craft, hunt, raid, and follow your gods to endure hardships of nature and save your clan from violent destruction. Welcome to the North. Ultimate Games was awesome enough to hook us up with some extra copies of this. What do you say we give one away right now?
Sounds great.
Hey, let's do this giveaway. Draw our first winner tonight for Viking Frontiers is BX Latino Heat. We will have more copies to give away through the night. So if you didn't win there, still have another chance. Bree, tell us, what is this game?
So I wanted to play this because I appreciate Viking-themed content, and I was curious how much historic research or thought was put into this project from a reenactor perspective, because it happens to be one of the time periods I know most about as a reenactor. I was hoping this was going to be more simulator than survival, but I was up for it either way. And I would say, honestly, there's a good blend here. You start off learning the basics with more survival elements, and then you move into simulator management elements. This is a first-person game where you can see your hands in front of you interacting with tools and weapons. First thing I did was go to the settings menu, and it crashed the menu by doing so.
Fun.
So I restarted, and it seemed to work fine after that. I don't know what that was about, but that happened.
Computer games are a thing. Shit happens.
Yeah. The story to this game is told to you with white lettering on a black screen, and then you wake up with very little direction on a beach. This is a survival crafter mixed with simulation, strategy, and even a little RPG in its genre makeup. And you get like a quest or two to get you going and teach you the basics. There's dialogue you could have with other settlers or ship survivors, whatever you want to call them. And you find out you're the leader of this expedition, and they are looking to you on how to proceed. Your father, Gunnar, is here to help guide you. And basically, you were all banished by another clan or something, and you and your people left on a ship, but then you got caught in a storm and crashed, and now you have to survive. And there's like 5, 6, 7 of you to start, maybe. Most of your interaction with the interface is going to be a radial menu on left trigger, or you're going to be using the select button or the start button or whatever for your inventory. So that's your main hub for crafting things is the radial menu. You grab a few plants, and you're quickly able to make out some ointments out of common plants like plantain and calendula, which is very realistic. The crafting wheel gets a little cumbersome at times. There's not really an easy way to switch between tools when you kill an animal and want to skin it. For example, you have to open your inventory and switch to your knife to skin it, and there really aren't any quick slots. So that was disappointing. But in this, you can hunt animals with tools and weapons you make from collecting things or learning better technology and building things like sawmills much later down the road. You build your own settlement, recruit more people. You build tools in your settlement, like looms for textile production. You can farm different crops. You'll need to cut down trees for lumber, bring it to the mill, you know, all these sorts of things. I would also mention the AI for animals was kind of lame. And I say lame as in the animals would clip into the ground. Or my first hunting of a deer, it got caught up in a rock and just sort of stood there and let me pummel it with a rock spear that I made.
Fun.
Yeah. Yeah. In some ways, mostly the crafting and item discovery in this game reminded me a little of something like Green Hell, but much more tame. The map you get is more of like a HUD compass, like in Skyrim. There's a lot of elements of this game that you've seen everywhere else in this collection of genres, in that survival management simulator kind of genre. You'll need to worry about the survival of others, not just yourself, because as I mentioned, you're the leader or the jarl of your clan. So you need to build a settlement, manage resources, and assign tasks to your villagers. They can also hunt and cut wood and do labor that's required to make a functioning society. But sometimes your villagers just sort of fuck off. I mean, like, their work assignments just don't hold, and you need to reassign them regularly. And that is just one of the bugs that I found most annoying in the game. Yeah, the beat or loop of this game is to build a Norse settlement, but it's kind of a slow burn. I feel like this game might pick up later on, but I'm not sure I had the patience to dedicate myself to get to that payoff.
Yeah, it seems like a slow burner.
Yeah, so at the point I am in the game, I'm building an economy and trying to get all the different things you need to do, like cooking and brewing and stuff to make it fully functional, and I feel like I'm just struggling to find the fun. I think the detail to the game was really well done. You need to manage hydration and nutrition. You have to hunt and cook and start fires, and there were religious considerations for your society when you get into the bigger management and city-building aspects of the game. And you have to build just about everything from scratch at first. You have to collect all the necessary foods and resources, and you'll collect some plants and sticks and stones to make basic tools. You'll skin animals to get leather. There's a poison system and a drunkenness system. You also eventually get to raid other settlements. I didn't get too far into that. I think this had decent graphics. It had beautiful water, beautiful forests and landscapes, good lighting changes on the day-night cycle. But I only had an okay time with this one. Like, it has a fair amount of bugginess to it. Thankfully, I didn't run into issues like I read on forums with deleted saves and the like. I feel like this port had some concessions made to fit its ambitious scope into a console frame.
Well, let's talk about price on it. It clocks in at $19.99. What are your thoughts on Viking Frontiers?
I think this is an affordable price, but there isn't a lot of polish to the game. There were some bugs, like the AI behaviors not working properly, things clipping through the ground. The pacing was a little slow, and I got bored with this one fast. I'm going to say overall the best I can give this is a try it. Like, I appreciated the reasonable attempt at historic representation of clothing and buildings and the like. But this feels like a Viking-themed reskin of other games of this type, almost. Gotcha. But again, I think the price is really right for what this is. So, there all you right. go.
How about a Win It?
I think Win It is great.
Well, should we draw ourselves another winner?
Ooh, yeah.
Thanks to Ultimate Games, let's draw ourselves another winner of Viking Frontiers on Xbox Series X and S. Congrats to Trash Rando. Just got a copy of the game. Stay tuned. We got more later on in the night. Next up, Arcade Archives 2 Hyper Crash, developed and published by Hamster, released July 8th, Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5 for $9.99. Hyper Crash is a racing game released by Konami in 1987. Race along courses with various landscapes and buildings from all over the world while avoiding obstacles like drums and oil as you aim for the goal across all six stages. Slam into enemy cars to make them crash or jump in the air and land on them to crush them down. In this survival race, anything goes. Jacob, you were giddy messaging me about this game. Tell us about it.
So, yeah, pretty much ACA and Hamster have knocked it out of the fucking park with this one. Like, I'm loving this game. So Hyper Crash is a racing title released by Konami that I had never heard of, but essentially this is like the granddaddy of Burnout and possibly even the 2008 Speed Racer movie with the use of like how they used the Mach 5's auto jacks in that movie for what Speed was doing. And pretty much with this game is that it runs similar to, excuse me, I am burping up a ton this evening. Thank you. So it plays similar to like Outrun, where like you have that map of like, here's your guide of where you're going to be going and all that kind of stuff. And throughout the track, you have all of these cars who are desperately trying to kill you, whether it's they're trying to crash into you or jump on top of your car to land on you. They might be dropping oil spills, which make your car go out of control and stuff like that. And all the while, you have to manage your fuel and avoid hazards in the road, whether it is puddles of water, which will slow you down, barrels, which will just straight up destroy your car if you're going too quick when you hit them. And so there is a lot of danger throughout this game. And it took me a few tries to figure out like the ins and outs of this game. And by a few tries, I mean three races of getting seemingly nowhere, but having some fun, and then reading the manual finally and being like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. So you have a finite supply of fuel until you get to the finish line for whichever area you're in. And the way that you resupply it is by crashing enemy cars. Now, like, it could just be you run them into a wall, you could run them into a barrel, you could flip your car on top of them. But keep in mind that flipping your car also uses some fuel for you as well. And so initially there was one race where I was just like, ah, this is sweet. And I was just flipping my car all the time on everybody, but then I still ran out of fuel and I'm like, oh, what the crap? Like, why is this happening? And then, you know, I read the manual and find out, oh, it's because like I'm, you know, my jumps are causing me to lose more fuel than what I'm gaining from crushing everybody. So you have to manage that and also start being able to read the road pretty well, because you have to realize when enemies are trying to jump on top of you. So you'll need to flip at the same time or like right before it. If a barrel's happening, you have to like jump over it, you know, so on and so forth. And there's six levels in this game. I have yet to beat the fourth one, which interestingly enough has no enemy cars on it. It's just you have to get from point A to point B with the amount of fuel that you have and not slow down. But yeah, like I'm having, like, honestly, I'm just having a shit ton of fun with this game and trying to rack up as big of a score as I can. Currently I'm actually on the leaderboards for both high score mode and I think it's the time attack one.
Do you know how hard it is to find any information on this game?
No idea. No.
I like, there's so little, and I don't think it's ever been re-released anywhere. So this might be the first home version release of the game. I like, it came out in 1987. That's all I can find on it.
Yeah, like, I'm not, like, as I said, yeah, I'm not familiar. Everything just
has the same plot write-up. No one has any other info.
Which is wild, because, like, this is a totally awesome game. I mean, granted, there's no, like, there's no multiplayer in this game. Like, it's just you, so, you know, I mean, it would have been cool to, like, be able to race against somebody, but I totally understand why not.
Yeah.
But, this thing is an absolute fucking blast. Like, I'm having so much fun with this game. It is not getting deleted off my Xbox anytime soon, or removed from my Xbox anytime soon, even though I've already 1K'd it. Nice. Which is, it's not the most difficult thing to do. As I said, read the manual, like, and once you get the hang of, like, you know, crashing into enemies versus like flipping on top of them, like, you'll figure out your groove. And at that point, it just becomes a memorization of the levels and stuff like that. But this thing is so much damn fun. And this is an absolute gem that you know, as you said yourself, you can't find anything on this. This might be the first home release it's ever had. It's so worth it. Oh my God. Get it. Like, get it, get it, get it, get it, get it. This is like,
Stella, I'm glad you got your groove back. Any other thoughts on this one?
I have a question.
What's up?
What, when did you say this was released? 87?
Yes.
87.
God, this game's older than I am.
Yeah, a lot of the arcade archives are. There's a couple that are older than us.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we've had
From 80. Last week we had Ladybug. That was like, what, 81, I think?
Something like that.
Yeah. Like,
Arcade Archive series is awesome. That's why I'm mad we didn't get it for so long.
Like, and honestly, like they've been knocking it out of the park the last like couple months with their releases. Like, this is some awesome shit. Like, this game. Get it, get it, get it. Do not sleep on this. I don't even know what the price is. Just get it.
$10. If you
sell blood, sell plasma. I don't care. Just, you know, beat up somebody in the street, steal their money.
Pretty much like, all the ACA2 games are $10, except the big Namco, the bigger ones like Ridge Racer and that
tank Ridge one there, like Racer 18,
or $16.99, whatever. Anyway, we got to move on. Next up, Welcome to Kowloon, developed by Aleska, Notex, Naba, and Admia, published by Axios Games, released July 10th on Series X and S and PS5 for $9.99. Search for cheap housing in Kowloon and step into a first-person indie horror experience where ordinary people hide unsettling faces. What begins as a simple visit to a new home becomes a descent into narrow streets, cramped rooms, and secrets guarded from outsiders. Aki, what is Welcome to Kowloon?
Okay, so this is a first-person horror game that is very, very short. You head into Kowloon, which is this giant...
Aki.
What?
Aki, you're not allowed to say bad words.
Someone's going to get murdered. So,
yeah, 5 minutes. Let's go. You could do this.
Okay, thankfully this isn't one of the After Dark games, so this isn't going to be quite as bad. So you've gone to Kowloon, which is this very large, basically, it's an apartment complex, kind of, but it is a mix match of, like, everything's just... It's like an entire block worth of stuff, maybe two, compacted into an area of like three or four houses and built straight up. So it's all very confusing. It's based on a real location even, and that's what I'm actually talking about. It's this huge, just completely messed up area. And it's very cheap housing in the game. So you head there, and immediately everything goes... sideways, and you have to escape. I can't really explain much more beyond that because this game's only like a couple hours long. But it turns out
it bills itself as a short experience, so it's not like it's pretending to be a huge game.
Yeah, so it's like a being very in bed
with Joe, a short experience.
Yeah, like, buddy.
But yeah, so, you know, you immediately are just trying to escape. Most of the puzzles in this are, find the code for this door. A painting dropped. Let's look behind it. Oh, there's a number. I guess I should look at other paintings. It's like that level of complex. And again, very short, just a couple hours long at most. So
it seems like this is one that's more about the... Like the story and the experience than like the gameplay.
Yes, this is all about that creepy factor and how unsettling it is, more than anything, even more than the story, because there's not a lot of story here either. It's
Did you play this with headphones on?
No.
It advertises high quality 3D sound, and I'm wondering how that works in stereo.
I didn't know that. I don't know. I'll be able to tell you next time. I will go and find it and re-download it and play it again. And yeah, very short. So there's not a lot to say because there's not much in the way of story, not a lot in the way of gameplay. It's really all about creating just this really creepy atmosphere. And that is something these little Asian indie games do really well, as long as you like that style of, like, fear, that they do it masterfully. So it was very good. Like, the bad things that can get you for a game over weren't particularly scary things, but the atmosphere was creepy. Creepy enough, it made me jump twice.
Ooh, games don't usually get you.
No, they do not. And it did it twice. And it's like nice. A 2-hour max long game. So, yeah, it did good.
That's like the price of a movie. $10. What do you think of this one?
Okay with this. This is, for that price, this is fine. It's not a complex game. It is really all about just keeping you creeped out just enough that something can pop out and scare you. And I think that's totally worth it. That's the price of a movie these days, I think. So
easy achievements?
Oh, yeah, very. All of them are, I think 3 of them are based on how far you walk, which you will easily get just by playing the game. Nice. I think 1 is for running for a certain amount of time, which I got by accident just because I wanted to run around to move as fast as possible like everyone else on the planet. And all the rest of them are just for getting through different chunks of the game. So nice. It's just very straightforward. It's very nice. Very easy, 100%.
All right. Let's move on. Next up is The Fissure, developed by SMV Games in East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft. It released July 8th, Xbox, Play Anywhere, Switch, PS4, PS5, PC for $4.99. Take the role of a young man named Naul as he travels to his mother's hometown of San Andrein, a quiet and remote village that he's never visited before, or so he believes. Investigate the mystery of an old family home in an atmospheric visual novel style. Jacob and Bree, both you played this. Jacob, what's going on in this one?
Good question. Because this game moves slower than a bowl of oatmeal, and it's a visual novel that plods along, and you are this guy who is coming back to this house that he's not familiar with, and he's sure that he's alone, but then he starts hearing noises and it appears that he's not alone. Like, oh, there's like a cup of tea that was recently made. And then he starts finding journals all over the place and they have creepy messages like, I was here before, or you were here before, or something like that. And like there's areas of the house to explore, and like there's locked rooms which suddenly are unlocked once you find a key, or maybe they just become unlocked as you progress through the story, and it just moves on. And the writing is a little stilted, and I'm sure, like, I have a feeling that it's because it's being translated. Like, it's not bad. Like, it kept me somewhat involved, but this is not exactly the most exciting psychological horror, if it's even supposed to be horror.
I'm gonna visual guess novel based mystery. On the names, this is Brazilian or Portuguese or somewhere around there.
But yeah, and it's a lot of dealing with like his thoughts, things that he's trying to remember, and like some memories that will suddenly come back. But what does it mean? Well, you're not going to find out till the next chapter. Maybe. And it keeps moving at a snail's pace. And there are apparently 3 different endings for this game. And I, like, honestly, I'm not impressed with it. Like, it moves too slowly for its own good, and I had a feeling about this, and I was going to bring it up, but Bree had posted something earlier that it looks like it's AI art throughout the game.
Gross.
Because I had a feeling about it, because I was reading the text and I was looking at the images, and like there was one passage where it very clearly says that the photo showed him with his hands in his pockets, and meanwhile you're looking at the photo and his hands are down at his sides in the photo. And then there was another one, and I don't remember what it was, but it just didn't agree with like what was being written. And I was like, maybe it's intentional, and we'll find out that like, oh, it's a trans, like, you know, like there's multiple pathways or something like that. And then like, it just became like, along with that and like the piss filter, it just became pretty obvious that this was AI art. And I,
not yeah. good, not good. Yeah. Bree, your thoughts.
So here's all of my notes. The ambient music was a bit much, like it was too loud and too dramatic.
Oh my God. It's the same track over and over again.
Yeah. And it's too loud in places. It's too dramatic for the scene that it's in half the time. It was really odd and off-putting. All right.
I will comment on, let me just comment this on it. It's like somebody discovered the midpoint in the Beatles song Day in the Life, where like it just keeps building like, like somebody discovered it and was like, holy shit, that's my jam. I'm going to use that. And that's the only track that they used. And I'm like, oh my God. And eventually I just turned off the music in the game.
Yep. The game was short, the writing wasn't great, and the art was clearly AI, much like their other title on Xbox, Winterlight, Where Silence Says It All, which is also on Steam and specifically does have an AI-generated content disclosure. So that, to me, confirms with similar style that at least some art has been generated using image generation tools, and that images have been potentially manually curated, adjusted, and edited to fit the game's tone and consistency, color correction, visual cleanup, composition, and stylistic alignment. I don't give
a flying fur basket what they say, like, oh, well, we did this to it, and we enhanced it with this, and we Photoshopped.
No, it was clearly AI art.
I don't care. You're using AI. You're
and too they lazy used AI to filter it or whatever. Yeah, it was not great.
If you're too lazy to make your own game, I think we should be too lazy to review them.
Well, so I actually streamed the game, and after I realized it was AI art, I basically let the game play on auto for a few minutes and then sent that footage off with my note that, hey, maybe you should disclose AI from now on.
Yeah, they should.
Yeah,
I think Xbox really needs to have some kind of disclaimer on their store with games that feature AI like this. Like, there's too many games that we see coming out. A lot of them are like hidden object games or like find the difference games that are just overloaded with AI art. And I'm
Gross. And it's getting harder and harder to figure that out. Like, I'll go look up a game on Steam that's come to Xbox as a port to see if it's on Steam to have an AI disclosure now before I accept games whenever possible, because it's just like, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, I got a Firefox plugin that actually gives an overlay pop-up for any games that have AI artwork in them.
Oh, wow. So
you don't miss it. It's just as soon as you go to the page, it's like, yo, AI.
Wow.
It's very handy. So, $5 on this one. I think I know where it's going. What do you two say?
No.
It's like, even without the AI art, it's too boring and plotting. Like, it's not the worst writing I've ever seen in a visual novel, but it's just fucking go somewhere, man. It should not take as long as it does for the story to like pick up and hire artists. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, next up, we got two previews. We got Shop Crush, developed and published by Basil Team, releasing later this year on Steam. Manage your thrift shop, sell a hodgepodge of merch to picky customers, set the prices, bargain with clients, and turn down suspicious offers, order popular stock, fight off shoplifters, and manage your reputation. gain or lose it based on your choices. Aki, what is going on in Shop Crush?
Okay, so in Shop Crush, basically the world has, you're either in some alien world or aliens have come down, I'm not entirely sure, but you're dealing with people and humanoid entities. You're basically buying items to sell for your little store, and people are coming in and they're wanting to buy stuff, and you have to say okay or no to them. And the more you say no to them, either because you don't have what they want or they're like trying to lowball you to obscene degrees, they might just decide to kill you because, you know, they're good people or something. So you have to figure out how to get through the day so you make some money while also not causing people to murderize you. The demo has a whole bunch of levels. I think we went through 3 different areas, so it was probably like 20-something levels, 24, 28, something like that, I think, in the demo. So it's a decently sized demo, actually. It's pretty long. But you're going to die a lot, because you're just not going to be able to figure out exactly what you need to do to survive through the day, because you actually need to make money, and sometimes you're just going to lose a bunch of stock and not make any money because it sucks to be you. Because you can haggle with these people, but that makes them upset. You can deny selling something to people. It'll make them upset. Sometimes you'll sell things to them, and for some reason, it makes them upset. Which I think is probably a bug with the game, because I don't think it's supposed to do that. But what do I know? That's really all it is you're making money in a level, and then you're going and buying new stock with whatever little money you've managed to get to try and restock or get new stock in so that you can sell again the next day. And yeah, that's really all it is. Personally, I didn't really jive with this one.
It's still an early demo as of now. We don't know a release date on it, but it will be releasing to early access. So they will, you know, hopefully have a lot more content added through the course of development. Is this something people should wish list, follow, ignore? What do you think?
I think people should just try the demo. Because if this sounds like something you might like, because this is very much one of those management style games, in my opinion, and not a lot of people like those. If you're like, oh, this sounds interesting, just go try the demo. See if it is. If it is,
well, there's no public demo yet. You can jump on Steam and request access for the playtest.
Oh, yeah. Go do that. Or at least put it on your wish list. For everyone else, this is probably going to be a pass for you, because this isn't going to change your mind. It is surprisingly difficult.
All right. One last game tonight is Imprinted, developed and published by Cobalt Lane. It's coming soon to Steam. An audio restoration job becomes an investigation into the occult, and his elusive musician's damaged cassette tapes are exhumed in northern Italy. Use a fully operational desktop to sift through files, descending into the artist's world in this slow-burning ghost tale of creativity and obsession. Bree, what is going on in the preview of Imprinted?
So this game is like a psychological thriller built as a kind of life sim, I guess. I'll try to describe it better. You're Vincent Brandt. And we're playing with him on his computer. He's a musician doing some digital editing, and there's like an operating system crash, and he has to log in with a new password. And for whatever reason, the operating system will take like 8 days to restore all the data. But his computer's acting kind of weird. And Vincent is kind of like a tortured artist type. He's struggling to make music for himself. He takes odd jobs that come his way to pay the bills. So you're playing on this fake operating system that looks like a normal desktop with like a sticky note app and tiles justified to the left, And a taskbar with a clock and quick notification icons on the bottom right. And you choose your wallpaper, too. And you get some messages from your friend on Stratosphere, the social media app. And then you have like an email app you can open and a file manager. And it's all really familiar stuff if you're a PC user. If you've never done any sound editing, this game might be a little bit of a rough start for you, though. There are sliders and loops and layers for you to play with. And almost immediately, you get to these things. And there's very little instruction because our character is a sound editor, among other things. And he does like forensic audio recovery and things of that nature. And we get a message from our friend that helps us learn the basics, which is simpler than you might imagine. You need to get some sound isolated. And then quickly thereafter, we're inundated with a few messages. And this just feels like a normal day for me on multiple monitors. In fact, I was getting messages on the two other screens while I was playing the game. And I just kept like responding to them while I was playing the game, responding to messages in the game and checking my email in the game and then checking my email message that because there was a notification that popped on my real screen. Like it was kind of inception there for a moment. And then you get our first hook. It's a mysterious message written in computer gibberish as if it had been corrupted or something. In addition to the screen, we get like a shadow of Vincent from time to time as he stands up and like deals with his dog. And then we get to like a little to-do list of messages and quests and things to do for clients and friends, like fix audio files. And not only do we get audio files and computer operating system stuff to play with, there's a mix of FMV in here too. Like when you log off the computer for the day, it zooms out of the computer and turns into a first-person FMV of Vincent, who then feeds his adorable doggo before heading off to bed. So you're just kind of noodling around with little tasks and getting distracted by people like you do in real life. But like Discord and FaceSpace and, you know, all that. But all the while, you're getting further and further down this rabbit hole of a mystery that starts to unfold in regards to a mysterious audio file of some musician who disappeared a long time back. First, you have to remember your password based on the data stored on the computer, using password hints to hack into your own stuff, which, having had to do that to find my dad's passwords when he passed, was kind of realistic. Like, the password hint was greasy things that go vroom, and you have to find the picture of a car engine with the maker name on it, and that gets you into the file sharing app so you can work on your file. And then you have, like, these audio editing concepts, like the tasks are, like, isolating audio, fixing the reverb, bringing up the volume of one instrument in one part, fixing distortion in another instrument in a later part. And you get a couple little audio mini game type things to remove the echo and straighten guitar cables and just, you know, you get to noodle around with the audio editing. And the game feels really forgiving with the actual audio editing stuff. Like, you do need to be able to hear basic distortions, but you don't have to be a master trained ear to sort the game. And then you'll wade through forums and emails and internet archives in search of found media and answers. And it kind of, it's like immortality or telling lies, if you're familiar with those. Telling lies had the computer aspect where you're looking for clues as you comb through footage. And then you're scrubbing through audio instead of scrubbing through videos looking for the mystery, like in Immortality. Both were excellent games, by the way, so I have high hopes for this one. Some other things you do, like fill out a creative log that tracks the bigger picture of the plot. You can use synthesizer to make your own music, which is really neat. You create these little music videos with selections that you mix together, and the selections are kind of designed that the options work well together, but you're still making it your own music. And like the progression of the game is, it's like your computer is prescient, and it anticipates your needs. When you find a mysterious file in your recycle bin that's corrupted, your notifications tell you you have an email about a new free app that can fix that with instructions on how to do it. And so there's like another little mini game puzzle, and each day has a new theme and a new title to it. That's like the loop of the game. You get some work, you play around with the audio, and then you go down the rabbit hole. The audio is really well done considering how big a part of the game that is. You get ambient music when you aren't engaged in an audio session. That was a nice touch. Graphically, the interface is like well simulated. The recs for PC weren't that high, so my Frank and Potato runs this great. This is a mouse game, I'm sure you could adapt this to part of this for a controller, but really it just naturally works best with a mouse since you're operating a simulated computer. I'm not really done scratching the surface of this one, and I am intrigued. This feels like a bit of a slow burn, but the little hooks are well placed to keep you going.
Very good. It's still a preview, so we go with wish list, follow, ignore. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, so definitely on my wish list. And if any of what I said sounds interesting, or you think you might be interested in like immortality or telling lies from that perspective, that this might be interesting to you, definitely put it on your wish list. There is a demo available now that you can check out.
Very cool.
On Steam. Yes. Go do it.
And with that, we are finished. Big thanks to Mustin for coming on, hanging out with us, chatting about his new album. That should be out like an hour as we're recording this. It should be out very soon. By the time people are listening to this on YouTube, MP3, whatever, it should be out and available, and you could pick it up and play it and listen to it. And Dancing Mad is incredible.
There's so many good tracks on there.
There is. Very good.
Yeah, Shadow is amazing.
Music to end the show, we are going to play, at Mustin's request, the Edgar and Sabin theme. I say Sabin, he says Sabin. I don't give a shit. It's Sabin. He says Celeste, I say Celis. Just how it is. We didn't have voice acting back then. We just made our own shit.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyone have any final words to end the show? Don't all talk at once.
AI art is terrible. Please don't do it.